educators. One of the nutrition educators, or bilingual nutrition educators in the FoodWise program. And this is my colleague.
I am Natalie Miele, also bilingual nutrition educator for FoodWise in Racine and Kenosha counties. We're honored to be here tonight.
Thank you, ladies.
Yeah. And so we thought we'd just chat or focus on our collaborations with the Sharing Center lately. I know we have a lot of programming that happens, you know, in the city and stuff, but we also collaborate with others around the county, and the Sharing Center definitely gets a lot of our attention and love. We like to work with them, and we do have many other sites too. And in fact, the very person we were going to highlight is a virtual class we did with both the Sharing Center and the Wistosha Head Start, like parents. And maybe Ness can actually help me speak a little bit about it. She was one of the two that presented. And my apologies if I don't fill in all the blanks really well today. I was supposed to present with another colleague who's out ill today, so thanks to Ness for joining me. But we did it's called Eating Smart and Being Active series with them in the spring, and had it was two series. So you did the English language series?
Yes, I did the English language, and my coworker Rebecca, she did the Spanish series. It worked out very well because the Sharing Center was able to share our outreach, as well as the Wistosha was able to reach out to the parents. So I think it worked out pretty well. So we're gonna keep trying that way. The more we advertise, the more we reach out to parents, the better.
So this is specifically a series, it's like 9 classes where parents of young children participate. They, you know, do hands-on cooking when it's in person. And in fact, since there wasn't that hand-on cooking for this time around, since it was virtual, but the Sharing Center, like in our collaboration with them, they provided bags of foods that the groceries that were provided for the participants for whatever it was that was going to be prepared that day. So there was, you know, an educational piece, like a topic having to do with nutrition. Sometimes there's physical activity. I don't know if you guys did at that time.
Yes. Okay. Well, because it was virtually, we were sending the links for the exercises to do at home. And like Jill said, after each lesson, we depending on the topic, if it's fruits and vegetables, then we pick a recipe that has more fruits and vegetables, or if it's grains, we send the recipe related to that lesson. So they were able to get those items from the Sharing Center. Whatever the recipe we advertised that evening, they were able to go at the Sharing Center and get those items so they can prepare that same recipe at home. So it encouraged them to prepare, to add more healthy foods, make healthier choices. Of course, food was free for them. So, yeah.
Yeah, so this is just a little description of what this class is. I know we do so many different types of direct education classes, and for us, we know what they are, but of course, not everyone would necessarily know. So it's a series of 9 classes, 90-minute classes, and it just gives a little idea of what they are and what some past participants have thought of it. So that was one of the collaborations we've done with them in the last so many months. One thing we started it probably in August of 2020 when the pandemic was still a much more new thing. We started to do what was called a weekly featured recipe, and I believe you guys are all on my my list, yeah, my email list for that. But we, in the past, we would always go into a lot of different food pantries around the county, and, you know, we would cook up something with, you know, based on the ingredients that were at the pantries in the at that moment, and interact with the clients that were coming in, and, you know, maybe provide them recipes and talk about how they could use the, you know, whatever foods were available at that time in a nutritious way and things like that. And since we couldn't go into the pantries anymore, we decided to, you know, send out an electronic flyer. And so we started, and it kind of started small, just to the pantries that we work with, and then slowly, you know, also the food bank and the RKCAA, and just more and more and more agencies all the time. And so we, besides like the sharing center, it goes to like the Twin Lakes Food Pantry, the Westosha Lakes Church Pantry, a bunch of places, a bunch of agencies in the city itself. Senior residences, you know, Shalom Pantry. We always send it out. Oh, do you want to pass that one around? It's just an example. That one, yeah. Just an example of one or two of them. But it, as I said, I think you guys have received those. yeah. We try and include some nutritional information, you know, that is pertinent as well when possible. They have a QR code so they can contact us if they're interested in our educational opportunities. And, you know, so we try and put in a few different pieces. Always English on one side, Spanish on the other, so we can reach as many families and individuals in the community as possible. For that specifically, we've had the food, both food banks have passed it on to a bunch of local agencies and partners. I know, for instance, the Shalom Pantry sends it to approximately somewhere between 180 and 200 families a week, that every time they prepare their foods, which is now more of a drive-up, you know, situation, as opposed to them coming in and shopping, they, you know, slip it one in their box if there's, you know, a recipe that would be pertinent to what they're getting at the moment. The Sharing Center gives it to approximately 70 to 100 families a week. And then I do have a few numbers for reach at a few other sites, but I'm not sure if they're still up to date. I don't know if the Grace Welcome Center is still sending it to 125-plus families a week, or Vivent Health Food Pantry to about 50 households a month. But a number of sites have told us that it, you know, it's been very helpful and useful to have those coming in. So those have still been going on, although we just, within the last month, I think, turned it to more of a monthly thing. So now we are actually getting back out into the pantries in person. And so the time that, you know, we saved in not traveling to a site and whatnot, we were putting into doing the electronic flyers, but now we're of course out and about more in the community. So out of that kind of model of you know, reaching our pantry clients electronically, the Sharing Center came to us and asked if we would help do something very similar with them to that weekly featured recipe, because they had received a bunch of spices that were donated. And it actually works, ties in really perfectly, because a lot of times, you know, people in the U.S. season their food with lots of salt or sugar, and, you know, to avoid that, because in the long run, neither one of those are great in large amounts for our health, you know, if you use spices instead, it can be a really good health benefit. So it was a logical fit for us to try and help them, you know, come up with a recipe and some nutrition information to tie into whatever spice they were highlighting for that month. So we have started just with them monthly to do something quite similar to the weekly featured recipe, but it's called Spice of the Month. they told us it was quite a hit in the first year that we did it. So they've asked us to carry it forward one more year, because they've got they've secured some more donations of spices. Can you send that one out? There was a little write-up that one of our colleagues did and gave a nice quote from the pantry manager about how it was appreciated by the Sharing Center clients. And that reach has been similar, even higher than the other one. So it's just at the Sharing Center, but it's going to, on average, about 312 families each month. From November to last September, like 3,400 copies were sent out to families. And so that kind of brings us to what we've got going with them as we move forward. So we're still planning to continue to send them a, you know, monthly recipe. And those recipes, I didn't you know, mention it, but we try and tie in specifically what they have, whether it's, you know, coming in TFAP, which is like a federal food assistance program, whether it's commodities that way, or whether it's, you know, a local farm gave them, you know, a big donation of something. So we try and use products that they need to kind of push through while they're still good, that maybe clients don't know how to prepare or how to do so healthy. So we'll be doing that. We'll be continuing with their Spice of the Month. And they've got a teen-focused program that they want to do. They're hoping to get individual smoothie blenders, and so they would like us to help them come up with both recipes that would, you know, encourage teens to use these, and also possibly tie it into. I didn't put that down here. They were hoping for a teen cuisine, a teen class about how to, you know, basic food preparation, nutrition, food safety, kind of all tucked in one. We're also planning on doing the West OSHA Head Start classes, both with the youth and the parents again, so that would just direct education with both of those age groups. And we are hopefully have in the works to do, again, and this would be a few months out yet, but another series of the Eating Smart and Being Active yet again with either Sharing Center and or West OSHA Head Start parents. So a bunch of different programs, some more virtual electronics, some direct ed, but all sorts of things to engage those out west of the eye. So I don't know if you have any questions about that, or if I made myself clear. Yes.
Yeah, you did. So the 9 classes that they take mm-hmm. are basically courses to teach them how to cook and prepare foods. Is that what goes on? Is that, and then once they complete the course, then they stay in touch with you, send them recipes to help them with their cooking and.
Yes. So it's the series. It's a full series of 9 lessons. It used to be in past, but if they do it online, it's still 9 lessons. If it's in person, we go 7 weeks, and we extend it for an hour and a half instead of 1 hour, because I think it's more quality when it's in person. So yes, we do the nutrition part first. We talk about a specific topic, and then we do the cooking. Once we're done with that, then we do a physical activity within that class. Within that built-in 90-minute course.
Okay.
For 7 weeks. At the end, of course, they graduate, they get a certificate. We do follow up with them if they choose to. We hope that they continue those skills as the time goes on, because making lifestyle changes takes time. If you offer a course for 2 weeks, it's not gonna be effective. So the longer it goes, you know, you keep up and motivate them. It's the motivation that is the key throughout that whole series. I had an example of a mom when she started a series. She said, I asked what the goal is. She said, well, I drink 7 cans of Mountain Dew a day, and I want to get rid of them. I said, okay, so what's your goal? And that was the first night of first lesson. She said, I want to go cold turkey tomorrow. I'm like, well, good luck. And then the next day, I said, well, let me know tomorrow night how it goes. And then she texted me the next day. She's like, I was miserable. I said, well, would you like my recommendation? She's like, yes. I said, well, if you're drinking 6 or 7, I say drop 1 for 2 weeks. And drop the 2nd 2 weeks after, and go gradually, because big changes, they are short term. Small changes, even though they may be discouraging, but small change is a success in the long run. So we try to let them know that it takes time to make a change. And, you know.
Especially when dealing with caffeine.
Mm-hmm. It was the caffeine, yeah. It was the sugar. So she was miserable. She had the ups and downs in her mood, her headaches. That's our body. Her body was shocked. Yeah. We need to know those steps. That's why education is crucial. We educate people in many topics, but I don't think we put enough effort on nutrition. And we survive with food. I think it's crucial. That's a basic need for humans.
How many did she get down to? I can't remember.
When we finished the series, she was down to 2. But she was very smart. What she did, sometimes she would drink bottles of Mountain Dew. What she did, she lined them up, like 6 Mountain Dews. So when she cut down, she filled that one mountain, the one that she was going to get rid of, she filled it up with water. So she was increasing gradually the amount of water, decreasing the Mountain Dew, but increasing the water. But she said, oh my God, I never drank water before. Now she drinks water, and she's reducing the amount of Mountain Dew. So these are some changes that we see in the community, and I think they're big. If we can just make one small change in one person's life, that's a big impact. And that one person, one parent, can teach their own children, because we are models for our children. So I think it's a success.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You had mentioned teaching in person and virtually. Are you doing? Are you offering both currently? Or
yeah,
as far as parents' class, we're doing whatever the partner prefers.
Sure.
We can do full online, full in person, or we have the hybrid version too, where we mix our series.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think with all of our youth that I can think of, we're pretty much back to just doing in person, even though last year there was still a variety, you know, depending on where the site was. But with parenting especially, yeah, it's kind of like, oh, you know, it really does work better with certain subsets of parents to offer virtual. So, yeah, kind of one of those benefits that's come out of pandemic that we can, like, oh, we can, you know, meet this need a different way. So
yeah,
we offer both for parents.
I think the pandemic has taught us many things. People learn that virtual is another opportunity or option, and it's flexibility, it meets their needs. So some choose to do the virtual, I'm sure, with other educators as well, because they choose to do it. Magic time is 7 to 8. It's like after dinner, before bed. So that's the time when parents prefer to take their classes.
Yeah.
Is it primarily didactic? Continuing with the question, is it primarily didactic when you do these sessions, or is it
when it's virtual?
Yeah.
There tends to be more. Do you guys do any of the, like, do you do the physical activity with them when they're virtual? Do you do any of the hands-on?
We don't, because the lesson is 60 minutes. We don't have enough time to do the physical activity and the cooking. We do show a recipe demonstration online, the same recipe. As far as physical activity, we do send a link for an exercise. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've done some of, like, us actually preparing the food or something, which is, if we were all together, you know, we would, as a group, do it together hands-on. So, you know, with everything, I think there's pros and cons to both ways. I think, you know, getting to do something hands-on is oftentimes a more effective way to learn and to, you know, be engaged with the material. But, yeah, when we're... If they don't, like, cook alongside us in front of the screen, that would be great if it were possible, but not always possible or practical at home.
See, so we want to teach one. To me, cooking is fun. I enjoy it.
Enjoy
it. In fact, your recipe, pea soup, I bought a ham yesterday, so pea soup. So it's the cascade. But what are some of the activities that they do then? So you have the didactic, and then they have an activity. What
The activity that we teach in the parenting class, it comes from Heart Association, American Heart Association, that is approved, because we don't know the health condition of our participants, and we do not force them to take the exercise. It's up to them if they want to join or not. As well as with cooking, if you would like to participate, you're more than welcome. If you choose not to, you don't have to. So yes, it is basic, like it's like a walking exercise, but the intensity increases. So it's not like we make them do the weights or anything. Maybe very small weights, but I do them at home myself and I sweat.
If you're talking about other activities in general too, I mean, you know, we do anything from like measuring out sugar, different drinks and, you know, common foods that people choose, or, you know, comparing food labels, you know, any kind of visual or hands-on way. And actually, in having, I can say from my youth experience, or teaching youth virtually, it's actually kind of nice to have them be like, well, go grab something from your cupboard and let's look at the label and learn about it and stuff. And, you know, so it's an actual food that they actually eat, not me taking in a cereal box that maybe they're never gonna, well, I don't like that cereal, so, you know, but it's actually something. So there are, again, kind of the pros and cons, just the little things that you found like, oh, this is actually works really well teaching virtually because, you know, the parents or whatever can go to their own cupboard and grab something that's yes. pertinent to them, you know, or something like that. So there's, I don't know, I guess just other activities that...
Well, because online lessons can be a little boring, so we did put a lot of activities within the lesson, like showing a video, mm-hmm. playing a video demonstration of the recipe, or playing a video related, like a short video related to the topic, or like Jill mentioned, if we're talking for whole grains, we would say, okay, now go to your cupboard or pantry, see if you can find anything that has whole grains. If not, just bring any grains and let's look at the label. Let's see how much fiber is in something that is white bread or white pasta versus whole grain pasta or whole grain bread. So a comparison like that, and they are very engaging.
Cooking has two dimensions to it. One is the scientific or the chemistry part, and the other is the creativity part. So once you learn the basics and understand the skill set, then the creativity kicks in. You can do a lot with it.
Absolutely.
Unless you're doing bread or recipe.
Actually, the best part is eating it.
You like that side of the table.
Well, I think it's important because parents are the providers for the family. It is very crucial to educate the parents. It doesn't really matter how much we go to schools and maybe teach the youth. If a parent goes to a McDonald's and brings a bag of burgers and feeds their family, then what's the point? So we are asking everyone to work together, to reach out more partners, to help us out in this process so we can build healthier communities, so we can prevent chronic diseases, so we can do better.
Quick comment on Mountain Dew. It is the number one most destructive soft drink for teeth.
Is it?
And bones.
Yeah.
It's the worst soft drink.
Bones, too. Yeah.
It's surprisingly, when I taught teens online, and I know we've done that in person, just showing how much sugar is in a can, in a Ziploc bag, it's shocking. When you measure how many, we show them the formula, how to convert sugar in
like grams.
From the label, the grams, there's a formula that you divide to get the teaspoons. It's shocking. I think it's 17 teaspoons. It is 17 teaspoons in one can. And I say, if I put 17 teaspoons in a cup, would you chug it?
I like to take the 20 ounce, empty it out, dry it out, and then just put the sugar back in.
Yeah.
And so it's like settles in like that much at the bottom, and they're like, really? Like, yep.
Not just the sugar in milk, it was the acid that you're
yeah. contamination. Yeah.
Probably affects our gut too. I mean, it's an overall health.
Yeah, a lot of 20-year-olds need all their teeth replaced.
Mm. Well, great, thank you. Any other questions for Jill or Ness from the committee? Youth and governance questions?
Well, I have something to add on.
Sure.
Well, just saying it from a youth perspective, I took culinary last year, so I'll just say some things that I liked. We, at the end of the year, we individually cooked things, like in groups. So it was like groups of three or four, but we cooked it enough for the whole class, and then we shared it with the whole class. So it was really cool because the teacher would divide the weeks by like kind of food groups. So like 1 week we did like, we focused on proteins, so we focused on meats, and then each person did like a different meat. And then like following proteins, we did like beans, and then I tried like quinoa, and it was really cool. Like I like now I like quinoa, so something like that is really cool. What was the other thing I was gonna say? One thing I would really like to learn in my classes, though, is snacks. Like after school snacks, when a parent isn't providing the food, like what kind of healthy snacks can I make besides like chips, popcorn, or like a pizza that I could throw in the ovens? Snack.
Popcorn's a whole grain.
I can speak to that. I don't know what school, what high school.
I was just going
to
ask you.
I go to a social central.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm most of the actor.
Okay, cool.
I taught at Ruther, the high schoolers, and we have a full lesson in snacks.
Yes.
Well, maybe
we can connect.
Yeah. And maybe we can come visit your school and teach you a little bit about that's a great connection. We always do.
One recommendation: natural candy, figs, and dates.
There you go.
I
like figs.
And I mixed, nuts, like cashews and almonds and whatever, peanuts. I guess you could do whatever. Mix them together, and that's the ideal snack, at least for me. You get your protein and you get some natural sugar without the eating the other junk.
Yeah. So a little ice cream with chocolate sauce isn't good.
I'm afraid not, Mr.
Bummer.
Tastes good though.
It's my favorite.
Once in a while is okay. We don't want to make a habit of doing it.
Right,
that
we now
every
call it sometimes food instead of junk food, like when I was growing up.
Good. Thank you, ladies, for the work throughout the community, and thank you for presenting to us tonight. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Anytime you need anything, please feel free to reach out to us, and we can pass some cards.
Yes.
Thank you.
Good, thank you. Well, I know we have several other educators with us here tonight, so we're eager to hear other educator and program updates. Is there any particular order you want to go in? It doesn't matter to me at all. So.
I can kick it off.
All right, great. Thanks, Mary.
So a few highlights of things going on. For me is I've started a stress management series with staff from Head Start. So it is a 7-week, it'll be longer just because of school breaks coming up, where after, at the end of the school day, it is working with their team to provide it's an evidence-based, material of just kind of general coping skills, stress management, things of that nature. And then also in the midst of doing a tenant education program at the Southeastern Wisconsin Veterans Home, which is a transitional living facility. And this is probably the third time in about a year and a half that we've been able to go in to do that, just because the people there, cycle in and out at different rates and they're staying there for different periods of time. So it's been nice to go back there this fall. And then tomorrow I am teaming again with the Kenosha Housing Authority. So this is something that I had done with them pre-COVID, and then things kind of halted. But getting back to working with their family self-sufficiency program participants for different financial education topics. So tomorrow we're talking about credit reports, things of that nature. So we have 32 people registered, and then that one's virtual, and then the Housing Authority staff said in 2023 she wants to start back up in person. So I can pass it along.
Great. Thanks, Mary.
due date this Friday. And then next Tuesday, the Youth Youth Resources Board will judge the first grant presentations to give up to $500 to each youth designed project. So far we've received 5 applications, and I think 2 to 3 more will be coming in before the end of the week. So that's exciting. The most we ever received in one round last year was 6. So I'm hoping to surpass that number. The youth on this year's board, as well as last year's board, have had a lot of really incredible ideas. They've started some social media initiatives, and others to be able to reach out to youth-led organizations in the community to let them know about Youth as Resources and spread more awareness about the program so we get more applicants. With our, our awesome new 4-H educator on board, we've been able to reach out to more 4-H clubs in the community. So 4-H clubs that have applied before are applying, and that's really exciting to me. So that's wonderful. We'll be getting the, we have the Youth as Resources Endowment through the Kenosha Community Foundation, and obviously our former colleague Amy Grile is now the executive director. So that has been a great connection to kind of revamp the endowment, to be able to be bringing more funds into YAR. It's been through COVID, there weren't as many activities with the endowment, so we're excited to kind of get, especially the youth, are really excited to get that relaunched, do some fundraising activities this year. So there's a lot of plans. All the committees on the board have been meeting outside of the monthly YAR board meetings, so that's been really great to see them taking initiative. Youth and governance is chugging along and going great. They had an awesome partnership this summer with the Kenosha County Health Department, and doing some one of the community listening sessions to talk about all of their perspectives on how we can address the issues important to youth in our community when it comes to health. So that was a really incredible collaboration. Our NEA program, we're into our first year of full programming after the pilot now, and I've decided to move some of the programming directly into the schools in addition to at the library to help with some more engagement and to kind of meet youth where they are. I found a barrier to getting youth involved was needing to travel, so we're going to be having monthly sessions at the library, and then as well as additional sessions in certain schools. So we have a strong partnership with Lance Middle School. And I'm exploring partnerships with other middle school and high schools throughout the county to do some career and college prep programming there. Those are my big updates right now.
Thanks, Erica. Thanks for those youth updates. I'd like to share next. Okay, great. Thank you.
I am in week 5 of my employment, so I'm just still kind of getting my bearings, but we've been doing a lot. They had open house the week before I started, so we're kind of in full enrollment mode now and doing trainings for volunteers. And I happen to also come on board when the annual financial reports and charters are due, so I've been collecting a lot of those and submitting IRS documents. I've also most importantly been going to clubs and projects and meeting the families that are there. Couple of things that I'm hearing that I have short-term goals on is to revamp our website for the 4-H program. I've heard several parents and myself tell me it needs some changes, some updating to make it easier to understand. And then also I'm hearing from my parents that they would like new family orientations to make it easier to know what's available for them within the program. So I'll start working on that soon.
Great. Sounds like your first 5 weeks have gotten up to a good start. We're really excited to have you.
Oh, thank you. I very much enjoyed being here.
In the horticulture program, I've been working with my colleagues to set up the program, the landscape and grounds maintenance short course program for next, in the month of February of next year. This is a 4-week short course program targeted primarily to the green industry audience. That includes landscape contractor, lawn service providers, and any other horticulture professionals. And so we work together, the colleagues from Waukesha, Dane County, and myself, we work together in hosting this program online. In the past, we used to have it in person, but we got so comfy with online, basically is we've been able to get wide variety of speakers nationwide. So this year, we're going to bring a speaker from Michigan State University to address about the oak issues that we've been facing in our county. So Michigan is also facing the same kind of stress issues related to oak. People are thinking it's mostly Oakville, but it is not. There are a lot of other factors that affect the oak tree. So the Michigan State University professor, he's a retired pathologist. He also wrote an article about this. This year's Landscape Magazine. So he's going to, we're going to invite him actually as one of the feature presenter for our short course program to talk about it. So we also have some speakers from, from Ohio State University, as well as from Minnesota, and some topics on prairie related as well too. So we're going to have a portfolio of different aspects in landscaping program for next year. So we've set the stage. We start going to marketing that program in the month of December for that. I've been working with our master gardeners in setting up a conference next year in March 11th here. It's going to be a face-to-face, nothing online in that one. The Spring Into the Gardening Conference is going to be back again, and we're going to host it at Kenosha County Center. I've been working with the master gardeners, setting up the speakers, and lining up some of the agenda for the program as well, too. Recently, I had an opportunity to be as a guest speaker to talk at the Wisconsin Public Radio with the Larry Miller Garden Talk Show, and I was being I've been answering some of the gardening calls live during the talk show. Most of the calls was related to how do I take care of my shrubs and as well as my berry crops during the fall time. So it was very interesting that people are testing a lot of different type of berry crop besides, growing blackberries and raspberries. How do I take care of them? When shall I prune them? How do I actually overwinter them? So those kind of seems to be the typical questions I noticed. Recently, I published an article at the Wisconsin Arborist Association's newsletter. And this is about the upcoming invasive pest called the spotted lanternfly. I briefly mentioned at the last PDAC meeting about it. So this is one of the invasive insect that we need to really keep an aware about it, because Kenosha could be the corridor actually for this particular invasive species.
What was the name of it again?
It's called spotted lanternfly.
Oh, okay.
It is native to China. And it has been established in Pennsylvania in 2014. Right now, about 15 states has this invasive pest. And it doesn't discriminate one tree or the other. It attacks, so far, we have more than 100 species of trees have been vulnerable to this particular insect. And so which means that what it does is that this particular insect is a hopper. It sucks the sap. Not a small quantity of things, a huge quantity. So you can't park your car underneath the trees anymore, because you can see all the sticky saps dripping on your windshields and stuff like that. And further, it causes some sooty mold issues and weakens the trees in the long term. And it's a very nuisance pest. At the same time, it can also be very detrimental to our landscapes. So I've been working with our state entomologists, getting to know what the Department of Ag's and a strategic plan is going to be. If it happens, what are some of the actions that need to be taken? What are some of the regulations needs to be aware about it? So I've been working with our state entomologists to know what's going on the statewide side, so I can keep you guys posted as well too, and get things aware about it. Yes.
So you said it will affect any tree. Do you know what kind of patterns it will go? So let's say it hits a forest, will it wipe out the whole forest or just some trees in the forest?
So
it doesn't matter the species.
It is not a pest like emerald ash borer that is very specific to ash tree and wipes out. It is not like that. So this is more of a pest where it sucks the sap off it, weakens a tree. So once a tree is weak, then probably it becomes more succumb to all the other stress issues, including environmental stress issues or including to any other issues it becomes. But for homeowners, the biggest issue is that all those saps that drips actually from this insect, because once the insect sucks the sap off it, it poops out all those things. And those poops are very sweet and juicy in nature. So what it means that it attracts all the ants. and it attracts the yeast and blackens up. So if you have a tree next to your patios or something, your patios will be completely covered with this sticky substance, actually. And these insects multiply in a huge amount, and they have interesting behavior. I'm planning on giving a presentation down the road about the behavior of this insect. This particular insect really like one of the tree called Tree of Heaven. Thank God we don't grow them, but alternative to Tree of Heaven is that it can really suck sumac, black walnut, maples, you know, name it. So, and there is a why it goes into all these different trees, there is a reason to it. It's very smart. It's not like any other, like a box elder bug or lady beetles, not. And it is very smart is that for them, they need two things. They need sugar, they need defense mechanism. Where do they get the defense mechanism? They get it from actually from the tree's secondary metabolites. So every tree produces these kind of secondary metabolites for its own defense. It goes to the trees which produce the highest amount of these secondary metabolites and sucks it up. So like if you talk about like, you know, sumac is one of the classic example. It really likes it. Besides the Tree of Heaven. So there are certain species that really targets those things. So it's very interesting in terms of to know its life cycle and the biology. You know, I'm trying to push our states actually to do more research into this one. So currently we don't have a state entomologist focusing on the research aspect of it. So, you know, most of the information we are getting it from Pennsylvania and Cornell University.
Is there any defense for it?
So that is the interesting thing that really we need to focus on the research aspect. There are private companies that are pushing for, you know, a chemical method of controlling it, but I don't know how far that's going to be suitable for Wisconsin culture, because we are very aware about pollinators, because when you start using all these chemicals and stuff, it's going to affect the pollinators. And it's not like one species we are going to tackle about it. We're going to talk about multiple different species. So far, you know, I don't see any viable, you know, studies that's been done in a that's going to be very safe for the environment. So that's why, you know, we need to do more research to find out what is the best way to tackle it so it's safe for the environment.
So most invasives go through a bell curve. You said we're kind of at the front end of the gateway to it, going along that bell curve. When would we expect this to really be an incipient that we have to contend with?
Even next year, it could be already here. We don't know. We are waiting, actually, who's going to be the first one to call and notify us or something.
But already here versus at a level that becomes a real nuisance pest. Is that projected 2 years, 5 years, 10 years till we
from,
get at such a level that...
From Pennsylvania State University. Pennsylvania is the first one actually detected it in 2014. By the time when they had the detection, it actually was a little bit in the population was known level. And since then, it started to climb up, you know, quite a bit. We really don't know what is the peak curve or the peak nature of it. It is still a new invasive bug, you know, so we really still don't know what is the dynamic, population dynamic is going to be, what kind of peak curve it's going to be. They don't have any natural predators. That is the biggest issue. And for them, this whole, you know, native species that we have is like a, you know, big feast for them, you know. So they can really quickly populate. And it's a matter, we still don't know, we don't know.
So you said no natural predators, so chickadee or whatever.
No, that is the reason why they go for sugar and they go for the secondary metabolites, because these secondary metabolites of tree provides the defense mechanism for these insects to protect it from any other predators, including any of the, you know, birds or any other wild animals. They don't like it.
Tastes bad or toxic or whatever.
Toxic, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Do you know their resistance to the cold?
So that is a very good question. Say, there is a climatic, that is a, in a computer model that has been generated to know to what extent this invasive insect is going to spread to in United States, in North America. And why I mentioned especially the, you know, Kenosha, you know, the southeast West Wisconsin is going to be the corridor is that according to the computer model, this population, you know, this insect is going to be hitting up only to the southeast part of Wisconsin. It's not going to move further up to the northern Wisconsin because of the cold. So we are in zone 5A, which means that our temperature, the minimum, the maximum cold temperature we're going to get is minus 15 degrees. So I think we can able to tell that based on this computer model, about minus 15 degrees, it can able to survive, in Wisconsin. And if you look into it, most of the southeast part of Wisconsin could be a habitable zone for it compared to the northern part of Wisconsin. Now, these are biological insects. Things can change. And with the climate change happening out, who knows, yeah. Thank you.
You're good, thank you.
Basically, they say to squish it if you see it.
Yeah.
I've been reading up on this.
See them, handpick them, get rid of them.
All right, any other educator or program updates for us tonight? Anything else? All right, then we will go to our director update. Interim Director Nguyen is with us virtually. Thank you for being here, and feel free to give any updates that we should be aware of. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks for letting me join virtually. I'm currently in Wausau at a meeting, a two-day meeting, so I appreciate the virtual attendance. So thank you for all the educators that gave those reports. As an interim director, it's really exciting for me to hear what's happening in Kenosha, and so thank you for being there today. And also I want to say thank you for the supervisors that that supported us around the community development educator position over the past couple of weeks, and I want to thank you for that as well. I don't have much of an update besides for the area extension director position is in the interview process, and so there should be some sort of announcement perhaps in the next, I would say, couple of weeks, maybe two or three weeks, depending on who the candidate is. And it does take us a little while for all of our, typically in extension, we do not make any formal announcements until letters are signed, background checks are made, and things like that. So we keep, there won't be announcement made until that's all finalized. But again, we're in that process, so hopefully you'll have, the team will have a new director on board here in the next month or so. Other than that, I'd be happy to take any questions that the committee may have. That's a very short update that I have this evening.
Thanks for taking the time to be a part of us virtually as you're away, with your professional development. Thank you, Chrissy. Committee, any questions? Youth and governance supervisors? Anything at all? All right. Okay, well then, if there's nothing else, that concludes our UW Extension portion of this meeting. We'll just go on a brief break, and then we'll resume next door in the public hearing room for the land development portion of our meeting. Thank you to each of you educators for being here tonight, taking time out of your schedules to travel here and to spend time with us tonight, and keep up the good work throughout the community. Thank you.